This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later in the hour, a controversial experiment in human reproduction. First, this week, you know, it sort of felt like the clock had been turned back to the 1960s, the first launching of a man in space. This time it was not Yuri Gagarin or Alan Shepard, but Lieutenant Colonel Yang Liwei, the first Chinese to be successfully launched into orbit, then returned safely to Earth. The technology, that old capsule-style rocket, and it's not much different from those used by Russia and the U.S. back in the 60s, but having a third nation with its own human spaceflight capability could kick off a new wave of competition. The Chinese are already talking about the possibility of going much further, possibly landing a person on the moon or creating its own space station. As the American and Russian space efforts falter with a string of setbacks like the shuttle disaster and the disappointing International Space Station effort, could the Chinese become the new leaders in human space exploration? What do you think? Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. As always, you can surf over to our website for links to what we're talking about. Let me introduce my guest. John Logsdon is director of the Space Policy Institute at George Washington University's Elliott School of International Affairs in Washington. Welcome back, John.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Marcia Smith is a specialist in aerospace and telecommunications policy in the Science Policy Research Division of the Congressional Research Service at the Library of Congress, also in Washington. Washington, good to talk to you again, Marcia.
Good to be here.
Marcia, how much of a surprise was this? So everybody expecting this? You can't really do this in secret, can you?
No, and the Chinese had indicated ahead of time that they were going to have this launch. They weren't very specific about how many taikonauts were going to be aboard or how many orbits it was going to make. That kind of information they withheld until the very last. But it was known that this was going to happen.
And, John, this is not really new technology, is it?
Well, part of it is new. You know, in your intro, you say this was the capsule that was used in the 60s, but Soyuz is being launched tomorrow morning carrying three people to the International Space Station. So this is a kind of technology in current use for transporting people to and from orbit.
So they had new technology on it. So.
Well, I mean, the jargon word is mold line. This looks like a Soyuz capsule in terms of having three parts. It's bigger. Mm-hmm. We don't have details on how it's outfitted, but I would be surprised if it didn't have more modern electronics and avionics and other systems in it since it's a recent build. And there's a certain logic to the functions of the three parts of the spacecraft. So I wouldn't call this old technology. Mm-hmm. We in the U.S. are headed in our next interim vehicle, perhaps to a capsule ourselves.
Yeah, or a space plane going backwards. Why is this a big deal, and is it a big deal, John?
Well, it's a big deal in the sense that this is an exclusive club. Only two other countries have demonstrated the ability to put a human in space, which is a hard thing to do, as we found out, and get them back safely, as we found out with the Columbia accident. And it does add one more element to China's claim to be a major player in regional and global affairs. I mean, the notion of having humans in space as a way to signal the power of a country goes back to the Soviet Union and the United States in the 60s, but I think for a new entrant, it's still valid.
Marcia, you agree?
I think it's a big deal for China, certainly, and it may be a big deal regionally. I think that we tend to look at it from the United States perspective because we've been launching people for more than 40 years, and so has the Soviet Union / Russia. But if you look at it from everybody else's perspective, you know, Japan has had many astronauts in space, so has Europe, but they have never decided to invest in building their own capability to put astronauts into space. So China has taken that additional step. It wasn't enough just to be able to put Chinese astronauts into space. They wanted to have their own capability to do it. And so I think that this is a watershed event for the Chinese space program.
Do they have enough money to continue on with this?
Well, that's a big question, of course. And they've had a very long-term goal for their space program since I can remember. And they're proceeding very slowly. And even now they're talking about their next human spaceflight being 1 to 2 years from now. So I think that they need to look at how much they're investing in space. And from what I gather from what I read in the Chinese press, there are some Chinese who are also asking those questions about the need for investing in this kind of activity. So I don't expect them to move out very quickly and suddenly in any new directions.
But they have talked about going to the moon, building a space station, things like that.
Well, so have we.
Yeah, and they talk about it in very general terms. You don't often see years associated with it in official Chinese government publications. You'll get individual scientists or program managers talking about we're going to do something in 3 years or in 10 years or something like that. But when you look at the white paper that the Chinese government put out in 2000, they talk about them as goals, but they don't really put time frames on them.
Mm-hmm. Of course, when our space race was a politically driven space race, do you both suspect this is politics also?
Well, for this allocation of this much money in an economy that doesn't have a whole lot of money, it has to be a political decision that in China's portfolio of activities, it wants to be seen as a major power and a choice of not only comprehensive space capability, but human spaceflight is part of that image.
You agree, Marcia?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Are they keeping basically close to their chest? You said they had plans for a couple of years from now for the next launch. Are they keeping that just as secret as they did this one?
Well, the statement I've seen in the Chinese press is that it will be in 1 to 2 years, which is very general. Yeah. And that's the way their announcements usually are. They don't put specific dates on it. Even this launch, up until about a month before the launch, they were saying it would happen at the end of 2003 or in the last quarter of 2003. It really wasn't until a couple of weeks before the launch that they started looking even at mid-October.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the best predictor of the future is the past. There have been 5 launches of this spacecraft, 4 without a crew member aboard, and now this one since 1999. So they've been at like 9 or 10 month intervals. And I think that's a reasonable expectation for the next one around. I mean, this was just a first test flight. The idea that you jump immediately from this to Chinese bases on the moon seems to me to be not very realistic thinking.
So, what would the next steps be for them if you were to look in the crystal ball and say, well, if they were progressing along toward maturing, what would they be doing next in the next series of flights?
Well, I think that people are losing sight of what else it is that China launches. Everyone is so focused on this human space flight. I don't think they're looking at the fact that what China has been launching all along, because they've been launching satellites since 1970, mm-hmm. really have been applications-oriented satellites for communications, navigation, Earth remote sensing / reconnaissance, those kinds of activities. And I would imagine that they're going to continue launching. They launch 3, 4, 5 times a year, those kinds of satellites. In terms of human exploration, again, the next human flight might be in 1 to 2 years, but they are talking about a robotic space probe to go to the moon maybe in the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Right. And as far as the human program, I would expect the next one either to be a longer duration flight and with more crew members. The Shenzhou capsule can accommodate 3 people, so I would imagine if they're building it to accommodate 3, they're ultimately going to fly a multi-person crew.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we also tend to forget that there are other partners in space. I mean, is there not a European probe headed to the moon?
Yes, there is.
It's taking a very long time to get there. It's a 500-day trip to the moon.
It's testing out ion propulsion.
That's right.
So there are things going on.
India has indicated its intent to send a robotic probe to the moon sometime in the next several years. Japan is doing that. I mean, space is an arena for lots of countries to be active.
And why isn't China then doing a cooperative effort with the other partners? Partners is the wrong word. The other participants in space now. Why would they say, hey, we're going on our own when they might team up with somebody else?
Well, China actually has fairly extensive international cooperation on a number of programs, and they have a cooperative Earth orbiting science mission with the European Space Agency coming up for magnetospheric studies, and they have talked about cooperation in human spaceflight as well. They've mentioned for several years their desire to get into the International Space Station program, but the U.S. has not invited them in so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a cooperative Earth observation program with Brazil, another dimension to your question, Ira, is that ultimately the Chinese space program is controlled by the People's Liberation Army, and has almost all that happens has a security dimension to it, which makes it very difficult for civilian agencies around the world to have very intimate cooperation.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this is more of a military, hey, we're here and we're like it was when we were in the space race with the
no,
Soviets?
It's not military. It's national security in a broader sense of an indication of technological competence, of organizing power, of kind of the soft and hard power of a country. But this mission in particular, I don't think has had any military applications.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this comes at a time when, you know, the American space effort is more or less grounded and humans in space and the Soviets don't have any money for their own? Now the Chinese are jumping in and saying, hey, you know, look at us. We can do this stuff.
Well,
good timing for that? Do you think they
didn't
matter to them?
This was done on China's schedule, not in reaction to what's going on in the rest of the world. I mean, this is the first human test flight in a program that started in 1992, has had four experimental launches without a crew member. So I don't think this was timed reflecting the situation in the other space programs of the world. But it certainly serves as a reminder in the United States that our current leadership is not automatic, that unless we get our program, get the shuttle back flying, and get our program on a positive path, you know, we could sit where we are and watch others pass us by.
But you don't think there's hand-wringing going on in the halls of Congress about this being competitive, then, and being that a political boost, hey, let's get something going again, it was in 1957 or something like that.
I don't think Marcia can comment on what the Congress is doing, so let me. I mean, Congress being Congress and congressmen being congressmen, there will be, and it already is, some posturing of what a horrible defeat this is for the United States and why we need a new space race and lots of rhetoric like that. But I think it's just that, it's rhetoric.
One thing I can comment on is that there was, in fact, coincidentally, a hearing yesterday at the House Science Committee on the future of the U.S. space program. And I did not get a sense there that there were members who thought that this was going to spur another space race, but rather that the U.S. had to decide for its own purposes what it is that we think should be done for the future of our own program.
Did they get any closer to deciding that?
No, they heard some very excellent testimony, but they made it clear that this was their first step in considering this very complex issue.
Well, and the reality is the initiative in an area like that lies at the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue in the White House. And the White House is carrying out a high-level review of the future of the U.S. space program, and particularly of the human space program, preparing a statement for either Mr. Bush or Mr. Cheney or NASA Administrator O'Keefe for some time, probably either in December or early next year. And that's going to outline at least this administration's view of where we're going.
Possibly in the State of the Union address, something like that?
Well, we have on December 17th, the 100th anniversary of the Wright Brothers flight. We have the State of the Union. We have the first anniversary of the Columbia accident on February the 1st. There are plenty of occasions for saying something.
And, of course, the most important one will be when the budget comes up to Congress in February.
Ah, follow the money. All right, Marcia and John, thank you both for joining us. Marcia Smith, we're gonna take a break and come back and talk more with you, so stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about China's venture into space with my guest, John Logsdon, director of the Space Policy Institute at George Washington University's Elliott School of International Affairs in Washington, Marcia Smith, specialist in aerospace and telecommunications policy in the Science Policy Research Division of the Congressional Research Service at the Library of Congress. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to the phones while I tighten up my jaw. Gerard and Philly, hi. Hi, Jerry.
How are you?
Hi, go ahead.
I'm a big fan of your show.
Thank you.
Finally got through. I got lucky. I wanted to say I think a lot of this has to do with introducing parity into the space program, and a lot of it also has to do with economics more than military, although the military, effects of this down the line for China would, or should be obvious, even though this mission is just to see if the guy can survive going up and coming down.
So you think this has got more military aspects of it than we're talking about?
Well, but yes, but not for offensive. I think it's a purely defensive thing for China because, A, they have a lot of satellites, like your guest said, that they're putting up there now, telecommunications, and they see that, you know, Germany and the U.S. and Britain are, like, basically dominating space with satellites for telecommunications. And they could also be putting masers or lasers or particle beam-type weapons on there, which could very easily pick off other satellites in space, and that would be a huge economic loss for any country doing that. So they have to actually be up there seeing what's going on with their satellites. Otherwise, they're just shooting stuff up and wishing and praying that it stays functional. So mm-hmm. You have to have some type of maintenance force, or, you know, you have to basically have a presence up there. And then you get into the espionage stuff. You know, if they don't have parity, then whoever's putting the stuff up there, the probes or whatever, can sneak things up and use that as an excuse and just basically, have their own way, and there's no checks and balance. So I think it's a good thing.
John Logsdon, any comment?
Well, I mean, China has aspirations to be a major world power, and having, as we've demonstrated in our various conflicts over the past decade, having space capability is an important element of today's military power, and awareness of what's going on around you is also important. So, things that are okay for us ought to be okay for other nations in the world.
Have they created a whole infrastructure like we had in the 60s, building the ground base, the infrastructure, the construction, the research, the technology, to continue now with progressing in space?
Well, they have a number of institutes. They have launch sites. They have tracking ships and tracking stations, including at least one in Africa. So they are building up an infrastructure to continue their space program at whatever pace they decide to proceed.
Mm-hmm. Would a space station seem logical for them?
They've said that they want to build a space station, and in fact, one of the things they're thinking of doing is the Shenzhou has these three modules, one of which is called the orbital module, which stays in space, and it's still up there. And unlike the Soyuz, this one has its own maneuvering system on board, so it can make maneuvers. And they've talked about docking several of those together mm-hmm. as their next step, and they refer to it as sort of a space laboratory, not a full-fledged space station like the
right.
International Space Station, but as their next step, that's what they would do. And then after that, they would build a more permanent space station.
Give us an idea of the size. I guess the last orbiting capsule that we had, before Apollo, the Apollo was Gemini.
And Apollo.
If this is a three-seater, does this compare with the size of the Apollo?
I think this is, well, there are three parts to it. There is a kind of service module that has the engines and a lot of the electronics and propulsion in it. Then there's the descent module or crew module, which is the only part that comes back to Earth. It's kind of like an upside-down teacup. And in there are three seats and not much else. And then there's the orbital module that Marcia mentioned, which is has room for some experiments and some ability for people to move around. It's not roomy. It's not anywhere close to the size of the International Space Station, but it isn't tiny either. I think the whole thing is 8 meters, Marcia, is that right?
That's about right.
Yeah.
But
top to bottom.
Yeah. But it has something that our satellites didn't have, which were at least giant solar panels come out of it that I don't remember us having those on the Apollo.
Well, we didn't need them. We weren't staying in space for long duration.
And we had fuel cells
right.
for power.
I mean, one difference between this and the Russian Soyuz is it has solar panels on the orbital module, so it can have a source of energy in orbit for extended duration flights.
1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hi, Kirk.
Hi there.
Hi there.
We had Harrison Schmitt, the last man to walk on the moon, Apollo 17. He was in town last night making a lecture. And after we did the usual hero worship stuff, we asked him about the Chinese thing. And his position was that this is a dire threat. His exact words were, this is the start of a new Cold War. He pointed out that they could put a guy up there and bring him back down exactly where they said they were going to. God knows what else they could drop out of the sky. And he was very pessimistic about the thing in terms of American security issues. He says as well, the main difference is, we said to him that, boy, this Chinese space program sort of came out of nowhere. He said, well, it's a secretive society. They have the ability to keep everything hidden. They didn't even broadcast the launch live, so that anything they are up to is going to be a whole lot harder to know about. So is there anything you guys can do to ease our paranoia out here?
Well, it didn't quite come out of the blue, as John has talked about. There were four precursor flights to this, and they did provide coverage of those four precursor flights. Sometimes it was after the fact, sometimes it was closer to the fact. And they did say in advance that they were going to have this flight. So I don't think it's entirely accurate to say that it's completely out of the blue. But on the other hand, they are fairly secretive about it. And although they had said they were going to cover the launch live, at the last minute they changed their mind, and they have the ability to do that.
John, any comment?
Well, I mean, they have been open about the character of their program since the mid-90s in terms of intending to develop human spaceflight capability. So maybe for people who aren't paying day-by-day attention to issues like this, this comes out of the blue. But for specialists in the area, we've known mm-hmm. for a long time that China was posturing itself to be ready to do this.
And the fact that it came down, Kirk, if your implication is, well, you could put a missile in there or a bomb,
yeah, exactly.
or something. Well, you don't need to put a man in space to do that. You could have a satellite right. that comes down.
Well,
so.
China has had ICBMs yeah. With the capability hit the United States for years. This doesn't add anything particular to that capability, which has been there for some period of time.
Well, what about Mr. Schmidt's contention that we're all in deep trouble here? What I'm hearing thus far this hour is that you guys don't tend to share that.
Well, Jack is a conservative Republican hawk and has a particular point of view that is perhaps more excited about the security implications of this than people closer to the center of the political spectrum. I mean, there are people who are concerned that this signals a capability that could be threatening to U.S. interests. I think it's not so much the ability for precise landing of a Chinese astronaut, but China does have capabilities to interfere with and perhaps even destroy some of our critical satellites should they choose to do so.
Kirk, did he show any moon pictures?
He had moon rocks with him and that kind of stuff. He was mostly speaking about geology because that's his, background, and the American Association of Petroleum Geologists is headquartered in Tulsa, and he's on the board. So, so it was mostly rocks and geology. We're the ones who brought up the Chinese thing.
Oh, you
and changed his tone immediately.
So. All right, thanks.
Maybe it's his party registration.
It's in the air. Thanks for calling, Kirk.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. It's amazing how fast this will flare up. Well, maybe it's not, Marcia, so amazing how fast this stuff will. It's bubbling under the surface.
Well, I think that the reaction to the Chinese spaceflight can be divided into three different kinds of reactions, and one is, you know, this is great. There's another country out there with human exploration potential, and whether they do it themselves or we all do it together, at least it's someone, you know, moving the boundaries out. And there is this other reaction that perhaps this is going to pose a military threat sometime, even if it's not this particular flight, that the kind of technologies you have that enable you to do this could pose a military threat. And then I think there is a big portion of people who just don't consider it to be that big of a deal one way or the other.
Well, and I'd add one more position. I got a press release from a guy named Rick Tumlinson, who is a libertarian advocate of the private sector role in space. And his take on this is it proves that the U.S. government's got to get out of the way and let the U.S. private sector open up the space frontier.
Yeah, we've had him on the program.
Right.
Where do the Indians and the Japanese stand? And now the Indians have always been at odds with the Chinese. Do they view this as a threat? Are they going to tweak up their program a little faster, do you think?
Well, I think it was not surprising that their announcement that they wanted to send a probe to the moon came shortly after the Chinese said they were going to send a probe to the moon. But once again, it boils down to how much money you've got to invest in these sorts of things. And the Indians and the Chinese, like every other country involved in space, has to look at how much money they've really got to do this kind of a program with.
Mm-hmm. And the Japanese, how far along are they toward getting someplace that they want to go?
Well, they have a pretty comprehensive program. They have a good launch vehicle. They have a series of rather elaborate satellites, but they've chosen to be dependent on the United States for human spaceflight, and so are partners in the International Space Station rather than developing their independent capability. I think of all the countries in the world, the one that is most threatened, and I almost put threatened in quotes, by this achievement is Japan, because Japan and China kind of compete for leadership in space in the Asia-Pacific region.
And in the dozens and dozens and dozens of articles I've seen in the past 2 days with world reaction to this, I do remember an article in the Japanese press interviewing sort of a person on the street saying, oh my gosh, how did Japan fall so far behind that China can do this and we can't? And then another article the next day talking about how, well, Japan had decided this was old technology and it's going to leapfrog what China has done and they're going to develop their own space plane.
Hmm.
So that can be another way that they respond to it, but once again, it boils down to resources.
Did they build their own rocket boosters for this one?
China?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Long March family of rockets has been in existence for a long time. It started out with derivatives of Russian technology, but at this point, it's pretty much an autonomous, indigenous Chinese product, and they had to upgrade it. The jargon term is human-rated the launch vehicle in order to commit to putting a person on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Did they use any surplus, the Russian hardware? They were trying to sell when they just, the Soviet Union collapsed, they were trying to sell anything they could. Was there any rocketry or hardware or spacesuits for sale that the Chinese might have gotten at a discount?
The only thing I've seen that on which both countries seem to agree is that China did buy a descent module from them, not an entire Soyuz, just the descent module. But China insists that everything that they used, they made in China. But it does seem to have a heritage in some of the Russian designs.
Mm-hmm. Well, and for example, the Chinese spacesuit made in China, but it's pretty much a direct knockoff of the Russian spacesuit.
Hmm. We're talking about space exploration and the Chinese putting a human in space this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Let's see if we can get a couple of phone calls in. Let's go to Philly and John. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi there. Ira, thank you very much for having me on. I've been talking with some individuals in China since the early 90s on the Internet, which is when I first started noticing that I could get in touch with them. And one of the things that I've really picked up in the past 10 years is that they have, as a nation, been sitting down and actively decompiling exactly what the United States did for its Industrial Revolution from the 20s to the 60s, and they are methodically going through and trying to emulate that. And I think that the space program that they have is probably one sign that they've begun this in a major way. People have expressed concern about military implications, but I think the economic ones are a little bit more of a concern. Namely, they're going to spur their industrial complex with the events that happened in the space exploration, just the way we did. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to hear some comments from our guests about that. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for calling. Marcia Smith?
Well, I think when the Chinese government puts out statements about long-term plans and the like, they do, in fact, put them in the context of the overall development of the country. And they talk about it in terms of sustainable development, revitalizing the economy, and their overall need to develop their science and technological base. So I think they do see it in this broader context.
Mm-hmm. John, you agree?
Yes. I mean, resources are scarce in China. It's a centrally managed, perhaps totalitarian society, but with increasingly democratic economy. But the choice of putting government resources in any particular place is a centralized choice, and I think this is seen, space capabilities are seen as a tool of China's economic, military, and political development.
Mm-hmm. Paul in Delaware, you're next. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Apparently, several ground-based tracking stations were used during this mission, and one is based in Namibia, I know for a fact. My question to the panel is, what does this mean for the overall partnership in space with between China and these countries, and also like maybe any contribution by these particular countries in some of these tracking stations, And in general, in terms of the geopolitical sort of arrangement, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Yeah, we have tracking stations around the world in different places.
Well, we don't too much anymore.
We had in the 60s.
But we had them for Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo. This is basically no different. China has a fleet of ships that are used or deployed for tracking, and then they needed something in the African area and apparently just struck a deal with Namibia to locate a tracking station there. I doubt seriously that there are going to be a Namibian taikonaut anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Marcy Smith, you agree?
Yes, I've seen references in the Chinese press to the station in Namibia, but whether that is a forerunner of future cooperation, I really can't tell. But as I mentioned earlier, China does have a number of cooperative agreements in space with lots of different countries, you know, Brazil, European Space Agency, and others.
Mm-hmm. Does this signify at all? Tell us anything about the next kind of satellite they may launch, or can you learn anything about that?
The very next satellite they're going to
launch,
as far as I know, is going to be the next in this cooperative program they have with Brazil. It's called CBERS, C-B-E-R-S, China-Brazil Earth Remote Sensing Satellite, which I think is supposed to go sometime this month.
All right. I want to thank you very much. Very interesting. I want to thank you both for joining us this hour. Marcia Smith is a specialist in aerospace and telecommunications policy in the Science Policy Research Division of the Congressional Research Service at the Library of Congress in Washington. Thank you, Marcia, for joining us.
My pleasure to be here.
And John, you too. John Logsdon is director of the Space Policy Institute at George Washington University's Elliott School of International Affairs in Washington.
As always, Ira. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to change gears a little bit, talk about experiments in infertility that have some ethicists and raise ethics questions. Ethicists are quite concerned, so stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break.